it's typical Villa to sort of bottle it now. I don't think it is.
I'd probably snog Brucey just to get him out of the way. You ever cried at the Villa?
No, I don't cry. I don't.
All right. Do we look short on the videos? Like, I know you only sort of see me from here and above, but do we give off short energy? I don't know. Voice makes me gag.
Well, I disagree. I love the Brummie accent, so.
Another one? That accent was designed for moaning. Imagine being a Brummie. Right, hello and welcome back to another Villa on Tour video. I am your host for today, Max Stokes, joined as ever by Amsterdam's finest karaoke merchant, Simon Lyons. How are you, mate? All good?
Yeah, I'm doing well, thank you.
Yeah, look at his face. He's buzzing for the karaoke bars in Lille. What does any YouTube channel do during an international break? It's a Q&A, so it's going to be a slightly longer video today. We've got a trusty hat of questions here. Randomly, it's for the love of Paul McGrath bucket hat that we acquired in Dublin a couple of months ago. So there's about 20 questions in there. We're going to have a brief chat about the Villa first, because, I mean, there's Villa questions in there, but a lot of them are quite random about us, YouTube, life, not necessarily Villa related, so a bit of fun in there. So should be a more exciting video, something different, get to know us a little bit more and just have a chat really. So grab yourself a cup of tea and just enjoy the sort of longer format of the show. Today we're filming somewhere slightly different, as you can tell, Hockley Social Club near the Jewellery Quarter. If you ever want a couple of drinks or live music, it's such a cool space here and they've obviously been kind enough to let us film, so a massive shout out to Hockley Social Club. So Simon, how are you, mate? International break. We were just talking briefly before we came on. Has it come at a good time for Villa? I think after that West Ham game, it felt like it was a good point. Probably wasn't our greatest performance, set up slightly differently. It's a couple of games now, isn't it, where Unai Emery set up slightly differently in the Tottenham game and the West Ham game. So I think it's a good time for me to just reset a little bit, get a couple of players closer back from injury, obviously, and just sort of, like I said, reset a little bit.
Yeah, I think it's been a hectic schedule as well, hasn't it? And I think, you know, we've had game after game through the Conference League, through the Premier League, and so we've been battling on all fronts, kind of thing. We've a lot of injuries as well, as we have been all season, essentially. And you know, the manager keeps finding ways to sort of overcome these injuries, doesn't he? And yeah, you're right. Over the last couple of weeks, we've tried something slightly different in the Spurs and West Ham games, I suppose. I guess it does come at a good time to sort of refresh, refocus. I think my only concern is that a lot of these games that are being played are sort of friendly games, sort of warm up to the Euros. A lot of them are friendlies, and so you're kind of thinking, you know, with 10 games to go of the season, everyone just wants to focus on the Premier League now, don't they? It's the business end of the season, and now our players are going off on international duty, running the risk of getting injured, and it's one of them that you're praying the phone don't ring. You're praying that someone doesn't get injured, sort of thing. Now with sort of 10 games in the season to go, so yeah, probably come at a good time in terms of how Villa are shaping up. But you're just sort of praying that we don't get any injuries.
Yeah, we saw Matty Cash, didn't we? I think he was pulling his hamstring for Poland the other night. Not ideal. The last thing we need is any more injuries. How are you sort of feeling now in terms of the last, like you said, 10 games now? It's really starting to hot up. If Villa are going to get top four at any point, it's got to be this season. Obviously, we've got to juggle the Conference League as well. I saw the Claret and Blue podcast did this, and John Townley said he was sort of 65% positive or sure that we were going to get even in the top five. I think I'd be much more confident of that. I've already said that I wouldn't worry about Manchester United, like I said, famous last words. But I'm feeling positive. I am feeling positive going to this last important stretch of the season.
Yeah, me too. I feel really positive about it. And I've said it for a long time. I think I don't think there's a lot between us and Spurs. I think I've said that for a while. And I think I say that because I think Spurs, maybe individually, have got some better players, the likes of Madison, Son, etc. I've said that for a while. But their team hasn't been together as long as Villa's. I think Villa have got that sort of more, I don't know, sort of together team. They've been together a lot longer. I still think Villa have got the better manager, so that's in our corner as well. I think it'll be tight between us and Spurs, but I feel like we're able to show a much better level of consistency than Spurs do. But I think it's going to be tight. We've got very similar fixtures. We've all got the top three to play, kind of thing. We've both still got Chelsea to play. We've both got very similar fixtures. Look, you can't rule Man United out, can you? You can't rule them out, because we know that on the day they're still a decent side and they can win football matches because they've got decent players. But I'm confident. I think we'll definitely finish in the top five.
It's looking like that might just be enough. Arsenal have got Bayern Munich, obviously, in the Champions League. That'll be an important game. West Ham battering Freiburg. Obviously, this is all for the coefficient. It's basically England versus Germany at this point,
yeah.
Isn't it?
Yeah, and so the draws could have been better for us, really. I mean, as you say, Arsenal got Bayern Munich, and a lot of people are saying Bayern Munich will definitely win. I'm not so sure about that. I don't think Bayern Munich are the team that they used to be, and I think Arsenal are sort of riding on the crest of a wave a little bit at the moment. So I'd back Arsenal to get the job done in that one. And then I think the one that you look like you think, well, England might lose a team there is West Ham against Leverkusen in the in the Europa League. Obviously, Leverkusen have barely lost all season, have they? And so, yeah, I think that's the one. But yeah, it's England versus Germany. But if we can have a couple of teams go all the way, even
Liverpool and Villa.
I mean, Liverpool should win the Europa League. I still bat Man City to go all the way in the Champions League. I think this is the time of year when they just come into their own. I think we can get top four. I really do. And I think looking at Spurs last weekend, how poor they were against Fulham, it was a bit of a shock that was. But I've said all along, if you take the game to Tottenham, you can get at them. Their defence isn't great.
Which is so frustrating because we kind of blew our chance to go even further against them, to be fair, with the way that we set up. But it's one of them. And Wolves after the international break, obviously. Local derby, half five at Villa Park. You've got to be winning that as well.
Well, yeah, and that's kind of... It's not a must win, but it's the type of games on paper where you think, right, Villa are going to get, you know, your top four, you probably need to win. What do you need to win? You probably need to win another four, five games, maybe. And it's those games against Wolves, it's the games at home against Brentford, Bournemouth, even like Chelsea, away at teams like Brighton, Palace. It's those sort of games that Villa will be looking at to really secure the place. But do you know what? I am confident though, and I've seen a lot of people say like in recent weeks that, oh, it's typical Villa to sort of bottle it now. I don't think it is. I think, you know, you were looking at Villa this time last season when we were, you know, we were thinking, well, could we have a run to finish in Europe? And we had an incredible run. Okay, we weren't dealing with the volume of injuries that we are right now. But I think Villa have been so consistent, though, under Unai Emery. And maybe the two halves of the season have been very different. The first half of the season, we were sort of blowing teams away and we were sort of, you know, being absolutely incredible, weren't we? Second half of the season, I think teams have wised up a little bit. We're not playing like that now, but we've found other ways to win and find other ways to get points. And Villa have been remarkably consistent, averaging what? Just under...
It's 2 points a game.
Which is remarkably consistent. And so I think if Villa were going to drop off now, it would be an almighty collapse, if I'm being honest, just because of how consistent we've been. So, yeah, if you're asking me if I'm confident ahead of this final running, then yeah, absolutely, I am.
100%. And I think people have talked about the sort of blip that Villa have been on, but we still pick up points. Like last season, we would have lost that West Ham game. Obviously, we could have at the end with obviously that dodgy VAR call and stuff, but it still feels like that Luton game felt massive in terms of just picking up results and picking up points. And you haven't been great. Obviously, the other team might have been a little bit better, but you earn your own luck, don't you? And you start picking up points, especially that Luton game. It just felt massive. And that's what, like we said, top four teams do. That's the Villa chat. That's the boring football side of things. Should we ask a few, well, should we have a look at some of these questions then? Like we said, a lot of them aren't football related. Some of them about us and just random YouTube questions, really. So it's a bit of fun. So I'm going to let you, the magic Paul McGrath hat, have the first one.
I feel like I'm doing the FA Cup draw or something here. So the first one is probably our favourite that came round on Twitter yesterday. So it comes from Orion. Okay. Snog, marry, avoid.
Oh, wow.
So you've got Steve Bruce, Sam Allardyce, or Jurgen Klopp.
Now, off air, you said you've got 100%, like, you know what you're going to say here. So I'll go first.
Go on.
I'll avoid Jurgen Klopp because he does my head in. 100%. I can't be dealing with him. Sorry. Just everything about him just annoys me. The other two's quite hard. I don't know. I think I'd probably snog Brucey just to get him out of the way. Because I don't think I could marry him because I just think he'd annoy me again. I think Sam Allardyce has got a bit about him, so I'll marry him.
See, I'm a little bit different there. Sam Allardyce scares me a little bit. I don't know.
Brucey scares me, though, because with Steve Bruce, like, he seems okay. He seems fairly, like, calm, and then he'll just lose it like that, which scares me.
See, I think Bruce is just a lovely man, and I think he'd be No, I do. I think he's a lovely bloke, and I just think he's an all-round good bloke. And I know he's been... You know, he gets taken the mick out of the press. But, yeah, for me, I'd marry Brucey. I'd avoid Sam Allardyce just because he scares me. The whole, like...
You snog Klopp?
Yeah, I think so. Just get it out of the way, because I...
Out the way?
I don't want to snog Allardyce. He scares me a little bit. It's like the whole, like, point of... Like gravy, like from up north, sort of thing.
He just
scares me a little bit. So, I'd go avoid Allardyce. Snog Klopp, marry Brucey.
Great content this is. Right, next one. Oh, okay. So this is the question that came up so much on Instagram and Twitter. Everybody wants to know this one, right? So, what are your jobs? How does Villa sort of impact on your life? What sacrifices do you have to make? What does your time off look like? Because obviously we go to all Villa games, home and away. So the first one that came up, people want to know what our jobs are. I think some people sort of expect that I do Villa on Tour full time, which I wish I did. I didn't. I've got a normal Monday to Friday, 9-to-5 job, where it's sort of in the similar sort of industry, if you like. Like, I do videography and photography. So that's sort of my thing for a large company. I don't do YouTube full time. I'd love to. I guess when you're covering one club with a YouTube channel, the sort of audience base is limited, really. I think if you do general football content, your subscribers can go hundreds and hundreds of thousands. But if you are so covered by one club, like I only do Villa, I'd only ever want to do Villa, there's only a certain amount of Villa fans. And I think Villa on Tour is quite good because you do get other fans of other clubs watching it because it's a group of mates going to the football and it's funny and it's a laugh and stuff like that. But I think, yeah, I'd love it to be a full-time job, but at the moment it's not.
Yeah, that's the dream, isn't it? That's the dream. But yeah, for me, yeah, I'm a nurse in the NHS. Not sort of on the front line anymore, so that's how I get my sort of my weekends off and like night times off sort of thing. I just work long hours, four days a week, sort of office hours, and so that enables me to go to the Villa on weekends and stuff, so I don't need to miss any, so yeah.
I think people talk about annual leave a lot as well, and it's like, where do you get all this annual leave from? I get 25 days, just like anybody else, and you just have to manage it, don't you? Like, we talk about how much annual leave have you got? Are you using 2 days for Lille? Are you using 3 days for Lille? I'm only using 2 days. We're going late on a Wednesday, for example, because I need to save that Wednesday with Fenerbahce away in mind, with Athens in mind. So it may seem like it's really easy for us to go home and away, and we are privileged in that respect, but it does take a lot of sacrifice as well in terms of giving up on family holidays, or you've only got a couple of days left to go away with the missus or something like that. Like, it's not ideal, but I guess if you want to go home and away and keep up your reference to go to all these European games, it's got to be done.
Yeah, and as you say, it's for me, the vast majority of annual leave is used on Villa. It's like using half days to go to, say, Man City away in a couple of weeks, or using a couple of days when we go to Lille and whatever. And yeah, it's kind of like sacrificing holidays, family holidays and stuff. And I always say, like, a lot of my holidays tend to be like sort of pre-season trips to follow Villa again. I combine it into the one, don't I? So, but yeah, it's no secret. We're not sitting on like a massive bank of days off. It's just that, yeah, we have to utilise our annual leave, and yeah, we do it fairly well. So next one is, if you could have any job in the world that isn't YouTube, what would you do?
Again, job isn't YouTube. YouTube would be the dream. Imagine like doing Villa on Tour. Like, that's just, as a full-time thing, that would be unreal. But I think it obviously would be something. My passion is videography, photography, creating content. I think being the club photographer or the creating content for the club, that'd be brilliant. Yeah, I don't think working in media in football is great, really, because they do, for me, exploit people in terms of how much they pay and things like this, because they know that so many people would jump at the chance to work at a football club. They do sort of compromise that by paying not great wages and things like that. So footballing money, if you're not a footballer or a manager or something, isn't great. But yeah, creating content in football full time would be unreal. And I think you've got an answer to this, haven't you?
Yeah, I think, you know what, for me, I think I've always just wanted to work at Villa. I think even before I had any sort of ambitions to go to uni or anything, I was like, I'll just work for Villa. I work in the club shop or the ticket office or something like that. I just wanted to be down at Villa Park all the time, to be honest with you. But yeah, I don't know. Like, I always say, like, I wish like football clubs would come out with like a club nurse kind of role, so I could easily take that up. Or yeah, I always say the person that's got the best job in the world, without a doubt, is Damien Vidigani, who works alongside Emery. What is he now? He's the director of football operations at the
he's
club.
He's probably got some funny role, some president of something. But basically, all we see of him is that he waits on the side of a pitch to sort of hug Emery at the end of a game, and he's basically like his translator and things like this, isn't he?
I think his role's grown a bit. I think he came in.
I'm sure he does more than that.
He came in as like Emery's chief of staff, didn't he? And Emery's deputy kind of thing.
Because he's been with him for a while, hasn't he? Like, he takes him everywhere.
Yeah, but like, he works very closely alongside Mancini, doesn't he? Unlike on the football operations side of the club. So, but I think he's got an absolutely incredible job. So if Damien has to go and they want to replace him with anyone, then I'm your man.
So next question we have got. How do you always get the back of the coach? Do you own the bus company? No, it's a bit of a boring answer, really. We just get on at the first stop and nobody else really gets on. So we just get the back seats. And we have done for about 7 years. And because we're like Villa's hardest, nobody wants to come to the back and get us out the way, do they?
It's basically because we were just there at the coach stop very early, isn't it? And we get on first.
It's a very boring answer. It's a good group on the coach, though, isn't it? Because it's been like the sort of same 50 people going for years and years. Like, you just know everybody on the coach, and it is wicked. Like, you say hello to everyone. Obviously, we all go to the same pub and just have a chat and stuff. So you're not just in your sort of group of five or six, are you? Like, you just get on with everyone, and it is wicked.
I think that's what the Villa away scene's a little bit like, though. You get to know, like, you probably get to know like hundreds of people, really, when you think about it, don't you?
It's rare that you see someone in the away end that you haven't seen before or don't know.
It's like, it always makes me laugh, like walking through the streets of Amsterdam, and or wherever we've been away in Europe, in Poland, whatever, and you just see like people that you know, and you know, you're shaking hands about 20 times as you walk down like a 200 yard sort of path sort of thing. Like, it always just makes me laugh. But yeah, no, it's a good group who gets the coach. Yeah, we always enjoy it, don't we?
Yeah, I think the one that made me laugh was just in Bosnia, just walking through these back streets in a country you would never have dreamt of visiting, and just seeing some bloke who lives 5 minutes away from you and just expecting it. Like, it is wicked and it's totally random, but I love it.
Working with other vloggers, who do you admire?
This might be a bit weird, but I don't really watch a lot of football vloggers. I don't know. I think because, like I said earlier, like, I only really care about Villa.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't really watch another club's designated vlogger unless it was like from a mad game or something like that. But I think especially with YouTube, it's got to be your personality. Yeah. Like, anyone can film a football match or film somebody warming up or film a goal or whatever, but I think it's all about personality, which I think, not to blow our own trumpet, but I think that's why we do quite well, because we are a genuine group of mates who obviously get on camera and off camera, and I just think that's what people want to see. They want to see us have a laugh, and obviously when Villa are doing well, that's brilliant and stuff. But I watch Ellis from away days, like, that's again, he's got a personality. It's not all about the football match. I think if you watch one of my videos, probably about 35-40% is the actual game. A lot of it is talking more generally, us in the pub, whatever. So I think YouTube, to succeed on there in the football space, it's all about personality.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I'm fairly similar. I basically only really watch sort of Villa stuff, but I've seen a few things of other clubs, but I think you're right. It's, I always get sort of attracted to the ones where it's not just all about the football, where there is a little bit of personality. So yeah, but I don't watch any of them religiously. But yeah, there's a lot of good ones out there though.
I think it's ones with maybe more generally football related, ones that have like a storyline, like when Ellis went to San Marino or going to random places, funny stadiums, things like that. Something that you can create a piece of content around a storyline. I think that's what I enjoy watching. This one, we'll rattle through this quickly. Favourite away day of every season doing Villa on Tour. So I started this channel in 2017. So there's a couple of COVID years in there, but we'll start 17-18. I think my favourite away day that season was probably the one where Villa on Tour started. Barnsley away, 3-0. Keenan Davis scored like one of his only goals for Villa. Everyone was on the pitch. That was wild.
I didn't go to that one, but I think for me that season it would have to be the Sheffield Wednesday one, I suppose. Was it 4-2, wasn't it?
Whelan scored.
It was that actually famous game where Dr. Tony sent a message down to Steve Bruce at halftime to say, you need to substitute Glenn Whelan. And then Keith Wynas and Steve Bruce ignored that message from Dr. Tony, and then obviously Glenn Whelan scored in the second half and won 4-2, and that is a big lesson to learn in owners should not be interfering with managers. Definitely,
absolutely mental. The following season, 18-19, obviously the promotion season, plenty in there. I think everybody likes to talk about the Rotherham game because that had a lot of feeling about it. I remember so clearly getting on the bus after that game and it just felt absolutely massive. Like, you felt like we're getting promoted here. But I think for me it'll be the Sheffield Wednesday game, the game before. What was the score?
3-2.
3-2. Two late goals. It's 3-1.
No, 3-1. 3-1.
3-1. So we obviously scored a last-minute winner to win 2-1, and then we scored again with Tammy Abraham, and it was just 6,000 Villa in that away end. It was...
Yeah, and that was one where Jed Steer saved the penalty as well, wasn't it? And yeah, for me, it would be that one, or the one after the Rotherham one. As I said to you off-camera, didn't I? Like, it was just a feeling. It was just a feeling of that game. It was like, we beat Rotherham, and again, in adversity, really, as well. We'd gone down to 10 men, and Dean Smith made that change. He brought Codger on. We went two up top, and it kind of felt like, when we won that game, it kind of felt like, we're going to get promoted this year. And so that's probably why it sticks in the mind for me. But yeah, those two, definitely.
The season, our first season in the Premier League, then not too many to choose from. You've got Norwich 5-1. That was decent. But I think the Brighton game was good. I think it was only 1-1, to be fair. But you watch that clip of when Grealish lashes that in. And that away end is one of the best scenes. The noise is one of the best ever. I know it was only to get a draw, but that was class.
Yeah, and it's always the day at Brighton, isn't it, though?
We love it.
It's always a bit unique. You know, you sort of have a drink on the beach, don't you? And we've always been really lucky at Brighton. We've always had like really nice weather, we've always been in the winter. And it's always been really nice weather, really sunny, and so having a drink on the beach, it's just that it's a little bit of a different away day, isn't it? And so
you're not in spoons.
And as you say, we managed to you know, to get that equaliser. But that, I remember that day as well. It felt like a big point that did, though, because we were sort of decimated with injury. Do you remember, like, Vasilev was up front for
Vasilev
us?
Vasilev was running around.
Yeah, I remember that. Well, like, when Grealish scored, Vasilev was there as well. And so, exactly. Yeah, God knows, I have no idea.
Following season, then the season we came back from COVID, so 21-22, Leeds away was decent midweek, 3-0, that was class. But I think there's only one winner for this one, the Man United game.
Yeah, it has to be the Man United one. That was that early kickoff, wasn't it? We went up really, really early. We stayed over in Manchester for the weekend, and we and Courtney Hawes got that winner in, what was it, the 88th minute, and then they missed the penalty, didn't they, in the 90-odd minute. Was it Fernandes?
It was Fernandes, yeah, because Martinez famously went up to Ronaldo and said, why aren't you taking it?
That's right, yeah.
And the penalty was so bad. It's not like he saved it. Like, that was in the upper tier.
Proper ballooned it, didn't they? Yeah.
It was so good. And then just coming out of that, like, obviously everybody knows Villa's record against Manchester United, especially away from home. It's probably better away from home, isn't it, than at home.
Yeah.
But it was just perfect. Like, a last-minute winner. I think that was that just before Dino lost 5 in a row? Wasn't it?
Yeah,
it was. Sort of early on in the season. Yeah. So to one of Dino's last sort of proper good games, like, it was a decent way to go out. We'll forget about the 5-game losing streak. But the season after that, 22-23, there's quite a few in here, obviously. The first season of Unai Emery, plenty to choose from. Chelsea away, Everton away, again, Brighton away. We had a great season, didn't we?
Yeah, we did. And when he came in, we were just winning away game after away game, weren't we? So... yeah, it was a bit of a sea change for us, wasn't it? We weren't used to winning so many away games. But for me, I think it has to be that Chelsea one for me. It kind of felt like the starting point of something big that did, though, because we beat Chelsea, and then a few days later we went to beat Leicester on the Tuesday night.
We were stuck in, like, 11th place, and I think Chelsea were, what, 10th? Yeah. So winning that game actually leapfrogged us, and it felt like we were in 11th for so long. And then once we won that Chelsea game in early April, wasn't it, we just went.
Yeah, that was it. We went on an incredible run, and then obviously we ended up finishing Europe, which everyone would have laughed at if you'd have said that to them in, like, the previous October when Gerrard got sacked and Emery came in. So yeah, probably the Chelsea one for me.
And then this season you've got a few. Tottenham away was obviously brilliant, but I think it's got to be that Luton game. A lot of people have said that's one of the best videos on the channel. I think it is as well. It was just brilliant. And I say it because it's rare for me to go to a new stadium, and especially in the Premier League, go to a new stadium that away and everybody loves it. I loved it. It was brilliant. And a last-minute winner as well. You can't beat that.
No, and it was a great game, wasn't it? Obviously, we were racing to that 2-goal lead, and they came back, as Luton always do, but then we got that last-minute goal. But yeah, you're right. The stadium, the half-five kick-off, everything about that day was just really, really, really good. So yeah, I agree. Luton's definitely up there for me.
So, so good. This is the thing that everybody says whenever they see us in person. This is the comment they make. Who's taller, me or you? Right, but everybody says when they see us, oh, you're taller in real life. It's like, do we look short on the videos? Like, I know you only sort of see me from here and above, but do we give off short energy? I don't know,
but you're right, everyone does say that. Everyone always says, have you been in, like, a grow bag or something, don't they, like, to us? And, oh, I didn't realise you were that tall. And I don't know who's taller, though. I'm not really...
I think we're the same, you know.
I've never really...
I mean, some bloke measured us in a pub in Amsterdam, and I think we were all a bit drunk at that
point.
Yeah,
I don't remember that.
Shock. But I think we're, what, would you say you're 6'3"?
Yeah, 6'2", 6'3", somewhere between that, I would have thought, so...
I think we're all tall at Villa on tour. Like, Owen and Jamie are, like, similar, aren't they? So you're not allowed in, like, this group unless you're, like, 6'3".
I think Jamie's the tallest.
Yeah, he must be, like, 6'5" or something.
Jamie's the proper...
Like, on the video against West Ham, I was stood next to him, and I was like that. Yeah, I don't really look short that often.
Yeah, I feel like I'm looking up to Jamie, definitely, so yeah. Next one is from Harry. How do you deal with negative comments?
I mean, you just have to deal with it. I mean, I've done this channel. I think if you put your face out there, especially in football where everyone's so tribal and everyone wants to have a go at everyone all the time for your opinions and various things, you just have to sort of deal with it. I think early on, obviously, it was like a shock to the system. But I think because I've been doing it for so long now, just got to deal with it, haven't you? Suck it up. And I think Twitter's the worst. I don't really tweet anymore unless I'm promoting a video, because I just can't be dealing with people on Twitter. But we rarely get it in real life. It's just social media, isn't it?
Yeah, there's just the minority of idiots out there, isn't there? And I think it's, you're right, it's like social media. The stuff people say to you on social media that would never say to you in your face, kind of thing. And I think sometimes with this kind of thing, because you're out, you know, on videos a lot or on podcasts quite a lot and stuff, people think they know you, don't they?
Yeah.
That's the other thing. People think they really know you, like, personally, when in reality they don't know hardly anything about your life, essentially. And so I always do. I actually find it quite funny when someone has a dig. Maybe I wouldn't have been like that a few years ago, but when someone has a dig now, I just find it quite funny. I just laugh it off these days, because it really, really doesn't bother me or bother my life. So yeah, crack on.
Producer Tiff, can you pass me my phone? Because I've taken a screenshot of a few hate comments on the West Ham video. I screenshotted a few hate comments on the West Ham video, and this is like one video, just to give you a bit of context around like what's going on. Dude, invest in some blinds or at least curtains from this century. So talking about my bedroom, which is good. Someone called me Specky here, that's a new one. How annoying is that voice?
Let's have brummy accents.
Well, no, there's so many comments about our voices. If it's that bad, don't come back. Referring to the stadium, I wish. Do you ever stop moaning? Good. Can we write that dialect next?
I'm afraid it's just a brummy dialect. What can I say?
I'd say the same about the Cockney ones.
Exactly. Look, we're just honest working class people from Birmingham. So what are you gonna get?
This one's the best, right? Voice makes me gag.
Well, I disagree. I love the brummy accent. So
again, another one. That accent was designed for moaning. Imagine being a brummy.
I've got to say, any West Ham fans watching it, or any Cockneys watching it, being a Brummie is absolutely incredible. So, yeah, man, up the really Birmingham.
Rattling through these. Top three beers from Jeeves, I think is who asked that. I love a beer idea, as you can probably tell. But I don't like any of the boring stuff like your Carlins or anything like that. I like the funky ones. You know when you go into a pub and they've got like a massive loads and loads on draft and they're all like funky ones, like IPAs or pale ales and stuff like that. That's so me. That is like fruity beers. I just love stuff like that. Like when we were on the train down to Fulham, like what did I have? The Disco Forklift Truck. You know them weird beers you can get from like Sainsbury's and stuff. Like I think I've got a Yorkshire Pudding beer that I haven't touched because that scares me a little bit. But just like the funky ones, the fruity ones, the ones with weird names.
Yeah, I'm not a massive beer connoisseur. I like a beer. I do like a beer, but as you know, on like away days and stuff, for me, it's like I'll have a couple of beers and I need to move on to something else. I can't continually keep drinking beer. So I'm a little bit boring with it, really. Like I just like the standard, like your Coronas and your your Birra Moretti's and and stuff like that, which are all right. But I tend to have like two to three. Unless there's like a happy hour and there's like a pitcher on offer or something, like it was in Amsterdam. And then I'll quickly move on to like a whiskey or a vodka or something like that.
So. I like a Blue Moon as well. I don't mind a Blue Moon. Again, fruity. Yeah. Put that slice of orange in the top.
Or eight.
Yeah, eight's like more orange the better. I don't mind. Oh, okay. This is a Villa-related one for once. All-time favourite Villa memory from Scott.
It's hard, that is, isn't it? Because I've got probably loads of little like quirky ones, which people will be like, oh,
It's for different reasons, though, isn't it?
I think the biggest like moment of elation has to be. For me, it has to be beating Derby in the playoff final. I know that sounds a little bit tin part. Like people think, oh, it's Aston Villa, you shouldn't be celebrating like playoff victories.
Yeah, but we don't win anything though.
Exactly. Like I've never seen Villa win anything. You know, when we won the 94 League Cup and the 96 League Cup, I was what 2 and 4 respectively. So might not even have been that. It might have been like 3, I think, actually, something like that. So I don't remember that. So I've never seen Villa win anything. So the playoffs was a really big moment for me, and it was the culmination of that 10-game winning run, wasn't it? And just the general feeling and how rubbish it had been to follow Villa up until that point. It'd been really, really rubbish for the majority of me watching Aston Villa, and so that just felt like a massive moment of elation. So I'll have to pick that one.
You ever cried at the Villa?
No, I don't cry. I don't.
All right.
I don't.
Lack of emotion.
No, I don't. You know,
at football.
I don't. I've got to be honest. I've never ever cried.
Have you ever felt yourself like tearing up a little bit, like that bit of emotion, like
felt like you know, like you feel like the goosebumps, don't you? Yeah. Like, I felt that, but I've never felt like I'm about to cry or like my eyes go water or anything like that. No.
I have. There's a famous picture of me at West Brom. I say famous picture. I mean, people have sent it to me. Of me at West Brom when we obviously beat them in the semi-finals. I'd say that though is my best Villa memory. I just think that was just brilliant in that way. And at West Brom, like obviously the playoff final was brilliant, but I think Wembley, it's not the greatest stadium in the world for creating atmosphere and stuff. But I think especially at West Brom away in that tiny sort of away end and winning in such fashion on what felt like such a long night because it went to extra time. It was a hot night as well. It was just so long. The stadium announcer was so loud. I can still hear it now. The penalty shootout was unreal. Adoma could have won it and he missed just to add a little bit more jeopardy. And then to win it like that and that away end was brilliant. It was so, so good. And that's when I did actually cry. Like the emotion just was mental and I was just stood there tearing up, crying, man. Like it was brilliant. And hopefully I'll be doing that in Athens again.
Yeah, I don't judge anyone for crying. Absolutely, like go for it. If that's what that's what floats your boat, go for it. But
I don't mean to cry. I just can't help it.
I know, but I just don't get that natural. I just don't get that natural feeling. I'm just
cold, man.
I'm just buzzing. I remember. No, to be fair, like it felt quite like again poignant against Brighton on the last day of last season as well when we got Europe. That was another one. I didn't even feel like crying. I was just absolutely buzzing. I was just beaming from ear to ear. Really.
Even like Luton, I felt emotional though. Not to the extent of crying, but it just felt emotional. Like, oh my God, like we could do something special here.
Yeah, I get that. Yeah.
I guess this is more one for me. How do you manage slash cope with the stigma around people recording at football matches? That comes from Liam. I think there is a sort of stigma, but I think it's been going on for so many years now. Like, it's not a new thing, is it? About people vlogging at the football or recording or having their phones out and stuff. But I think I've done it for so many years now. I mean, you'll know better than anyone being next to me at most Villa games. Like, it's not like I'm recording for 90 minutes, is it? And I wouldn't want to do that because, again, that would take away from my experience. Like, even when we're on the attack or something, I don't look through the camera or I don't have the camera up here. Like, I'm watching the game like anybody else. I've just got the camera out. Like, I know how to, I don't have to look at the camera to record or anything like that. And I just love it though, because it's creating memories and looking back. Like, we talk about those games, our best filler memories. You can go on YouTube and look at them, like, now for us. Like, it's not in here. Like, you can actually go and watch it. And that's why I do it. That's the reason. And again, for people all over the world, because Villa are so massive, there's Villa fans everywhere. And hearing them say how brilliant it is, like, that just, that encourages me to keep on doing what I'm doing. And people will watch this and these videos from all over the world, and they'll comment from wherever. And it was poignant when we went to America, wasn't it? Like, they're on the other side of the world, basically, and they're saying they watch Villa on tour and they love what we do. And it's just, it's mad. So that's what, that comes so much higher than a stigma around recording at football matches. Like, I don't really care about that, to be honest.
Well, it's ridiculous, isn't it? It doesn't affect anybody else.
That's the thing.
It doesn't affect anybody else's day. And as you say, like, you know, I stand next to you, and half the time you don't even realise that any recording's going on, sort of thing. And so, as you say, it's a way of capturing memories. It's a bit of fun, isn't it? It's a bit of a laugh. Yeah. And, you know, it's not like you're standing there with, like, a massive, like, film crew all around you, like, massive cameras and, like, a booming mic or anything like that. It's like...
I might get you to do that, actually.
Well, yeah.
Do my boom operator.
It's an option. But no, you know what? I don't understand that. I don't understand when people pick faults at stuff like that. It's got no bearing on what they do, on their life. So what does it matter?
I mean, if I was going up to people and shoving cameras in people's faces or making it really obvious what I was doing or shouting and being really annoying, I'd get it.
Yeah.
But I'd try and be subtle. Like, I'm so conscious of what I'm doing. Like, who's behind me? Who's in front of me? Can they hear what I'm doing? Like, I obviously try and keep it to myself, so people aren't affected by it.
So the next one is from Paul. Will you be making another trip over to America?
Again, depends on the annual leave situation. Depends on whether Villa get to the final against Athens, because obviously we'll have to do that. We have to make sacrifices. Like, I'd love to do every single game, but I think there's rumours about Chicago, New York, Columbus Crew, is it, in America pre-season. So potentially not this season, unless we lose to Lille, and then there's plenty of opportunity to do that. We'll save a bit of money by not going to the final, whatever. So potentially, but if we get to the Conference League final, probably not.
Yeah, I think for me, probably not at all this year, to be honest with you. Just for a few different reasons, I wouldn't be able to get the time off like I did last year, in terms of annual leave. I know other people have booked it, unfortunately. But also finance-wise as well, I think Europe has absolutely battered my bank account. I've got to be totally honest. Absolutely battered my bank account. So, I can't see it happening this year, sort of thing. And I think I said I'd do like a European one if we get there this season. And I think the other reason for me is that it's, you know, it's going to be the same sort of side of America again. If it was West Coast, if it was somewhere new, you know, we were playing, I don't know, like in Los Angeles or whatever,
Las Vegas, villains.
Yeah, something like that. Then I'd probably want to make more of an effort to do it. But last year was absolutely incredible in America. We absolutely loved it. It was probably my favourite trip I've ever done. But yeah, it's maybe a bit of a challenge to do every single summer, sort of thing. So I'll probably be giving it a miss this summer. But yeah, I wouldn't rule it out again in the future, definitely.
Right, then next... Oh, God, I've picked up loads there. Do you talk to other Villa YouTube channels other than Dan Bardell? Do you see any at away games? Probably not away games, because... That's our USP. We're the only real ones that go home and away, obviously. But we do have a good relationship with the majority of Villa fan channels. Obviously, we'll go out for drinks with them. We'll meet up with them because they're genuine mates, aren't they? It's not like, oh, they run a YouTube channel as well. We better get along with them. Like, they're genuine mates, because quite a few of them have been doing them for many years as well. The two Dans, Dan Rollinson, Dan Bardell, James Rushton even. Like, I've known him for many, many years as well. Like, it's a great community, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, as you say, you know, we're really close to, obviously, Dan Bardell. We're close with the guys in the Claret and Blue podcast. Well, obviously, we did some videos of them, didn't we, back at Christmas time with Dan Rollinson and Matt Kendrick, and then we got to know John Taylor, didn't we, last summer as well
in America,
which was really nice. But yeah, a lot of mutual respect between us all, isn't there? And we all get on, yeah.
Yeah, definitely. And I think it's good for, like, creating content as well, to see that sort of crossover between different channels. I've been on various channels, people have come on our channel when we see them at games and stuff, and it's got that feel-good factor, hasn't it? And we all sort of get on and sort of encourage each other to do well. There's no sort of competition or snidiness house or anything like that. Like, there's just no need for it. We all love the Villa and we all want to succeed. And I think what's good as well, we all have slightly different content. I think there's a running joke about there being so many Villa podcasts and stuff, but I think everyone's sort of got their own USP and different insights and things like that. So I think it does work pretty well.
Yeah, and it was like, I always think back to last September when we all went to Dublin as well to see Neil and Paddy for the Liverpool McGrath podcast, and they did a live podcast in Dublin, and obviously we were involved and Dan Bardell was involved as well. And that was just nice, you know, seeing sort of different sort of Villa content creators in the same room together and all sort of supporting each other and supporting Neil and Paddy essentially in their podcast, which was really good. So yeah, there's a lot of good people out there and yeah, a lot of respect between us, definitely. So this one comes from Matt, kind of a little bit what we were just talking about pre-season, but a dream pre-season tour location.
I think we talk about Japan and like the Far East quite a bit, don't we? I mean, that would be expensive. Like, you'd have to hope Villa weren't in Europe that season, but just somewhere completely wild, like the culture and just a completely different country. Like, we've done a bit of Europe now and stuff, but just going to like that part of the world would be wild.
Yeah, I think there was a few rumours that we might be going to like the Far East this summer for pre-season. And I've got to be honest, that's one maybe I would have had to try to really sort of done all my best to get there, because that's very different, isn't it? As you said, it would have been very expensive, so I'm not sure what I would have done there. Maybe robbed a bank or something, I don't know. But yeah, I think Far East for me, definitely. I know they've done Australia in the past. I've never made my way over to Australia. I know the last tour wasn't great, though, in terms of locations in Australia, and so miles between each other, sort of in the world in the same sort of place, which makes travelling over from the UK absolutely a nightmare. But yeah, Far East, I'd say, definitely. Somewhere like Japan or Hong Kong or something like that.
Yeah, I'd love to do America again. Like, the America trip, like you said a minute ago, was unbelievable. Like, I'd love to do that again. Like you said, there's a slightly different part of America, maybe. I mean, there's so much in America. It's so massive. Yeah, I loved America. Right. Completely random one then, this. Which fallen club would you like to see back in the Premier League? I think this comes from like from our point of view, like, where would you want to go, or like an away day that you look forward to, just seeing them back in the Premier League or whatever?
I think for me, I think there's a really obvious one for me, maybe not for other people, but for me, it would be Sheffield Wednesday.
I thought that as well.
And the reason why, because when I first started following Villa, it was sort of the very late 90s, very early 2000s, and Sheffield Wednesday at that point were a Premier League side, okay, sort of struggling in the Premier League, but I just remember the likes of like Benito Carbone playing for them, and Paolo Di Canio, and when he famously pushed the ref over and stuff like that. And so for me, always in my head is that Sheffield Wednesday are a really big club, and they should be a Premier League club. And you look at like Hillsborough, how they like Hillsborough kind of reminds me of Villa Park in the way they hosted FA Cup semi-finals all over the years for history. So for me, Sheffield Wednesday are a proper club, a proper big club, and like, I'd love to see them back in the Premier League. Doesn't look too likely anytime soon. They are struggling a little bit. Hopefully they stay up in the Championship this year. But yeah, for me, Sheffield Wednesday, get them back in.
We hadn't talked about this before we came on, but my answer was Sheffield Wednesday as well. I absolutely love Hillsborough. Like, it's such a wicked stadium. Like, it's so, so good. They are a proper club, and it's a shame, really. I mean, there's so many out there, though, isn't there? I mean, it looks like Ipswich hopefully will get promoted. I think we'd like to go there in the Premier League. Sunderland as well. There's plenty out there, isn't there, that hopefully will be back in the Premier League one day. But I think for us, it's got to be Sheffield Wednesday. First thing you remember about Villa as a kid, who is your first favourite player? That comes from Stuart. I think my starting off going to the Villa for me was under Alex McLeish when I was about 10. So apart from the last few years, it's been pretty crap. I think my first proper player that I loved was probably Benteke. I just think he was the first, like, he got you off your seat. Like, he was class. Like, he would just put anything in the back of the net. In such a poor side as well. Like, we were so bad for so many years. And for him to get 19 Premier League goals was just an absolute joke. Like, he was a joke. But yeah, starting off on my Villa supporting career, if you like, didn't see a lot of good stuff.
Mine was a little bit earlier. My sort of first introduction to Villa was, as I say, late 90s. It was season 99-2000, season when we got to the FA Cup final. And my first game was the FA Cup third round tie against Darlington at Villa Park. And now, there's a funny story with that one, though.
Fallen giant Darlington?
Not quite. But funny story with that one, actually. That season, we were supposed to be playing, what a shock, we were supposed to be playing Manchester United in the third round of the FA Cup that year. But because Man United were competing at the Club World Cup, they had to withdraw. And so we ended up having Darlington in the third round, and we beat them at Villa Park. And I remember that was my first game with the old, it was the final season of the old Trinity Road Stand, actually. So I remember that. And just that season, I remember going to, I weren't a season ticket holder that year, I just picked up the odd tickets with my dad and stuff. I remember a game against Watford at home, and we beat them 4-0, and Paul Merson absolutely destroyed them. And then I ended up going to the FA Cup semi-final at Wembley against Bolton as well, and that was the old Wembley Stadium, and I just remember all like the old sort of like bench seating, sort of like on stilts, sort of bench seating, not proper seats. Yeah. And so yeah, a lot of my memories tend to come very late 90s, early 2000s, the John Gregory. I used to feel that side was really exciting. I did with the likes of Deion Dublin and Paul Merson, and Benny Carbone was absolutely brilliant for that second half of that season. So yeah, a lot of my memories come from there, really. I think there was a bit, there was always a lot of criticism about John Gregory at the time, that he was a bit negative and stuff, but I absolutely loved that team, and I just thought we were an absolutely brilliant team at the time, with a lot of likeable characters. So yeah, that's always the one that sticks out. Somebody says, what do you think, you know, what do you first think about Aston Villa? It always goes back to that kit as well, you know, the stripy kit, the one that's synonymous with Carbone and Merson. And so yeah, but for me, like, if I was going to pick a favourite player, Paul Merson every single day of the week.
Yeah, I think my childhood was like, I just think of it, and it's like Genting Casinos on the tap, it's Daffer Bet, it's Brad Guzan in goal, it's that sort of time. Like, even my cat is named after Brad Guzan, because like, when I was about 10, like, he wasn't even, because my cat randomly was born in 2012, Brad Guzan had one good season and that was after that. So I don't know why I called him Bradley after the 11-12 season, when he didn't play, did he really? Brad Guzan?
He played 11. Who was that under? 11-12 was McLeish. So it was sort of Shea given that year. And then it was actually the year after when he had a good season, yeah, Guzan. It was 2012 when he had a good season. 12-13, he had a really good season. Brad Guzan, probably his only good season. But do you remember that double save he made against QPR? Do you remember that one?
I remember the one from a Chris Samba header, yeah, right in the top corner.
Yeah, it was in the same move. Samba was like a header in the top corner, but then Samba absolutely smashed one towards the top corner of his foot as well, and Guzan saved that. It was literally the same like move. It happened all in the space of about 40 seconds. He had a brilliant season that year. He just tailed off horrendously after that.
Yeah, I remember recreating that save in my back garden randomly, because that was before I had a season ticket, and I actually was at that QPR game. It was a brilliant game actually. But I remember recreating that save in my garden. And I think Vyman scored in that game as well. I was just obsessed with that game. I don't know why. Didn't Jermaine Gina score for QPR or something horrible?
He did. Yeah. Was it three two that game?
Yeah, and Josh Townsend, I think, was playing for them as well. Like, yeah, some real random ballers in that game. But yeah, Brad Guzan. I don't know how we got into him.
So this one comes from, I think it says Dave. What is your number one petty gripe with Villa, and how would you solve it? I'm not really. Does he mean about the team, or does he mean
I just think in general. Like, I've got one. I think it's the pre-match stuff and the half-time stuff. I don't like how the music is so loud, like, as the players are walking out and stuff. Because I think, especially in a big game, like, I think it was in the Ajax game, like, I want to sing, like, us in the upper hole. Like, we want to create something here. You've got the fireworks, you've got the smoke, you've got God knows what going on, you've got that weird light show. Like, let us create something. Like, it's us. That's what it's going to intimidate teams coming, not your weird light show. That's Ajax are going to come in and think, what the hell is that? So just the really loud music, like, before a game. A few people might know about Bangarang, when that was playing for like weeks and weeks on end. I hated that. But just like the pre-match stuff, like, we could do so much better. I know the 1897 group, who are trying to get something going in the atmosphere at Villa Park, they're meeting with the club at some point, aren't they? So in terms of banners and flags, and Project B6 tried it, just something like that. Let's be a little bit different. Let's create something new at Villa Park.
See, yeah, I don't have a major one really, but I think I agree with you, by the way, there, because I thought exactly the same before the Ajax game. I thought, just turn the music off, because at that point Villa fans had started to sing, and it was like, come on, just turn it off now, because it will, you know, just get the atmosphere going. But they didn't. But I think this isn't really with the club, I suppose. This is just in general. I absolutely hate how, you know, it's always after a loss usually, but you go on social media and people are just tearing strips out of each other as supporters for not making an atmosphere or being too quiet or whatever. And I just think, you know, we're in modern football. We all know atmospheres throughout England aren't exactly, you know, absolutely incredible. We all know that. There's a lot worse stadiums than Villa Park, though, as evidenced last week at the London Stadium and the other ones that we've been to. Like, atmosphere at Villa Park at times, it can be a bit quiet at times, but then at other times, I think it can be really good. Like, against Ajax at home, I thought the atmosphere was brilliant. I mean, I sit in the North Stand upper, where, let's be honest, it can be dead at times. And yet, against Ajax, people were absolutely loving it in the upper north, like, really getting songs going, started and everything. So it's always that. It's just like, I feel like we've got a little bit of an obsession about griping with each other about singing or about creating atmospheres. And I personally think there's worse problems going on personally.
Yeah, it's just not the culture in England, is it? Like, we're not Germany, we're not Poland, we're not Eastern Europe, where they just don't stop. Yeah. Like, it's just not. So yeah, leaving early, I mean, the amount of comments I got on that Tottenham video when I left on 91 minutes and we were 3-0 down, like, who cares? And again, it's people who probably haven't even been to the game themselves. It's just trying to one-up each other, and it's just annoying. Okay, this is quite a fun one. How do you and the boys all know each other? We met in Leipzig in the pre-season 2019. I think we just started chatting, really, didn't we? I think I saw the tattoo on your leg and I thought, well, it's obviously a Villa-related tattoo, and I just started chatting to you. And again, that's an example of sort of go into the football, and people who maybe don't understand going to the football and understand the culture around it and meeting people. And normally, obviously, historically, when Villa have been pretty crap, the game is the worst part of your day. Yeah. And it's just meeting up with people you have, who you haven't seen all week, catching up and things like that. That's wicked. And obviously, that's how we've grown to be best mates through Villa, basically.
Yeah, it is. It is. And yeah, and then it's the other people that come along. It's like you get to know them through other people sort of thing, and then your sort of circle sort of grows. But yeah, it was Leipzig, wasn't it? It was sitting in them sort of cobbled sort of side streets, and get talking about my Villa tattoo. And another great trip, wasn't it? Leipzig in pre-season, not a trip that you'd think would be absolutely amazing, but it really was, wasn't it?
He was so good. And then Owen, I've known him since preschool when we were like two. He went to college with Jamie, so he brought him along, and then I became mates with Jamie. So like I said, the circle keeps on getting bigger and bigger, and you just get to know more people. It's brilliant.
It does. But I think the nice thing is we all bring our own little quirks to it, don't we? We're all different, we're all very different, but we all get on amazingly, don't we? And I feel really fortunate to be in like a really good group of Villa mates. Essentially, it's just nice. It feels like it grows all the time, doesn't it? Really, there's always new people joining and stuff. And it's really good. Really enjoy it. Next one, down to the last few. So this one's from James Rushton. Favorite European away day so far.
Again, I think they're all for like sort of different reasons. Though I remember coming out of Luton Airport, was it after Bosnia, and we were saying like, which one did you prefer, Alkmaar or Bosnia? I think Warsaw was brilliant because obviously it was the first one. We'll forget Hibs. The weather was good, whatever, but we lost the game. I think for me, it's between Alkmaar and Mostar, do you reckon?
I think the
I forgot about Amsterdam there, to be fair.
The three for me are up there. It's Alkmaar, Amsterdam and Mostar for all very different reasons, obviously. Alkmaar because we obviously won, and obviously that felt great. And we did a lot in that trip, didn't we? We went to... did the tour of the final ground in Rotterdam, the scene of Villa's, biggest triumph, really. We did the Ajax tour. Obviously, we didn't know we were going to be going back there. Mostar was just incredible because it was so quirky, wasn't it? It's such a lovely place. It was so, so quirky. I absolutely loved that trip. And then Amsterdam was just great because it felt like every single Villa fan on the planet was there, didn't it? And we had a good few drinks, and we did a fair bit. And that was, going to the Johan Cruyff Arena, watching Villa play there at one of those big stadiums. It's a historic team. It's absolutely incredible as well. So, yeah, all for different reasons. I don't know if I could pick one, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it's close, but I'd pick Mostar just because it was so completely random, and it was brilliant, and it was a country that I'd never been to before, obviously a city/town that I'd never been to before, and it was beautiful. Like, it was such a lovely place.
In terms of seeing the place, and I think it would be Mostar for me as well, 100%. It was just so quirky, wasn't it? Only like a week or so before Christmas. It did feel quite special, that one. So I'm with you on that one, definitely.
It's sort of one that you just won't forget ever, like that Mostar one. It was unbelievable. Last couple then. How long does it take to edit a match day video? You can answer this because you're the one who's snoring in bed when we're on European trips next to me while I'm up till 2 a.m. editing the bloody videos.
Yeah, so.
Well, you wouldn't know because you're fast asleep.
It takes a good few hours though, doesn't it? Obviously, because I'm fast asleep, and Max doesn't finish till what, 2-3 in the morning?
I mean, the America trip was mad because we basically did a video every day, and obviously we were out all day every day. So it's like, oh god, I've got to edit till 4 a.m. We've got a flight at 6 a.m. Like, it was wicked. But I'd normally probably say about 3 hours or so. I mean, if we've lost, I'll just want to get it out. Just 2 hours. But it's normally around 3 hours, maybe 4 hours with editing, making thumbnails, things like this, thinking of a title, doing the description, doing all the tags on YouTube. Like, there's a lot that goes into it and there's a lot to think about. But yeah, I'd say about 3 hours. Obviously, when it's a night game, you're up till 2 or 3 in the morning. On a Saturday, it's decent because you can sort of still have your evening. But yeah, it's a lot, but I love it.
And last but not least... is it going to be a good one? I think you've kind of already answered it, really, but I will ask it anyway. So could you ever see YouTube being your full-time job? Could it ever be financially viable?
I mean, somebody else asked a question that I hadn't included about how many subscribers would you need to make it your full-time job, but it isn't based off that, though. It's based on views. Obviously, that generates ad revenue and things like that. So I don't know, because it depends on how well Villa do. Obviously, views go up when Villa do well because people want to watch the content. If we've lost, no one's going to sit and watch a vlog of us losing unless it's the opposition fan. So I think with Europe and stuff, like, it's generating more games, which obviously generates more revenue, but obviously that goes back into the channel. Like, I'll buy new cameras to create better content. I'll buy new mics. I'll spend the money on, obviously, paying for Amsterdam or paying for Lille and paying for travel and stuff. So a lot of it, it's not just going into my back pocket and happy days, I'm getting loads of money here. Like, it's reinvested into the channel, and I wouldn't want it any other way. Like, I want to create better content and things like that. And I think people can sort of see that. I think if you watch videos from 4, 5, 6 years ago, like, you'll see the difference in quality. And that's obviously down to me becoming better at editing or getting used to what I need to do and things like that. But I think I reinvest into the channel. I mean, you know more than anyone, I've got about 1 billion cameras that I take to games now just for different things, yeah, just to create the best content. So at some point, maybe, but I don't see it realistically. But I think it works well, though, because I haven't got the pressure of thinking, oh, God, I need this many views to pay my rent this month and things like that. Like, I've got a nice 9-to-5 job, which I'm very lucky is quite flexible in terms of, you know, I can go to weekend games and I can book half days and things like that. So I am very lucky in that side of things. But, yeah, it's a nice mix at the moment in terms of having Villa on tour as an outside weekend thing and then my work 9-to-5. So, yeah.
Yeah, I suppose it's that fear, isn't it? I suppose it's that fear of, as you say, you having to have that pressure on, oh, I need to produce some content so I get some money this month.
But I think that's where the, I think that's where the quality might drop.
Yeah, exactly.
Because I think if you're thinking, oh, God, what content do I do? And you can't think of anything, and you're just doing it for the sake of it or pushing out loads and loads of videos just to get loads of views, that's where your quality drops. And I don't do previews or post-match reactions, probably because I don't have the time and stuff, but I don't... My passion is creating content at the game and having that USP of going to the games and having that personality and stuff, not just sort of sitting on a podcast. And that's not a dig at anyone who does that, like, obviously. But I don't know. I think I like how it is at the moment and stuff. Like, we don't normally do a lot of sit-down videos and stuff. Like, it is just the match day vlogs. It's just the international breaks. I thought we'd get together and have a bit of a laugh and stuff. But, yeah. Yeah, that's it, really. Yeah, so that's all the questions, really. A lot of people asked and a lot of people got involved on Twitter and Instagram, so thank you so much for that. If you didn't get your question answered, I do apologise. There was absolutely loads. So thank you to everyone who got involved. If you don't already follow us on Twitter and Instagram, please go and do that. Please do subscribe to the channel if you haven't already. I know it's been a slightly different form of content. This will go out on audio-only platforms as well, so this will be on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, things like that. So don't go and follow our podcast over there, the Villa on Tour podcast. Go and search that on Spotify, Apple, whatever it is, and you will find it. There'll be a link in the description as well. Again, a massive thank you to Hockley Social Club for having us. It's a wicked space. So if you're ever in the area on a Friday or Saturday night or whenever, really, come down. It's such a cool place. Live music, anything, and they're so kind to us here as well, letting us film. So thank you so much, Hockley Social Club, for that. Thank you so much for watching this video. The next time we shall see you will be next week for a 5:30 kickoff, a tasty kickoff time against local rivals Wolves. We shall see you then. Up the Villa.